Read and hear more about important news and policy issues at ncpolicywatch.com. This is News and Views with Chris Fitzsimon.
Welcome to another edition of News and Views. Thanks for joining us. The General Assembly considered hundreds of bills this week as legislation that failed to clear one house cannot be considered for the rest of the year. The flurry of legislation included more partisan changes to the state courts and election laws. Lawmakers also came up with a temporary solution to a crisis in the schools caused by an unfunded mandate to reduce class size in the early grades. Here to talk about it and to weigh in on his hopes for the Senate budget is Senator Mike Woodard from Durham County. Well, Senator Woodard, thanks for being back with us on News and Views. We appreciate your time.
Very glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
A lot to talk about in the few minutes that we have out of your busy schedule. But first, I just want to ask you, for people who don't follow it every day, what is crossover week at the General Assembly like?
It's crazy because there's a rush of bills. I think we took up 64 bills yesterday between the two chambers. Committee meetings called at the last minute, meetings late into the evening. It concerns me a little bit that we're not making the best decisions. We're tired. We feel the pressure of time. There's got to be a better way to manage this, but it's always a crazy week.
One thing that wasn't so caught up in crossover, House Bill 13, and for people who don't know the number, that's the bill the House passed to try to ease this class size, unfunded class size mandate, basically. What did you think of what the Senate compromise was?
It came up really short. It didn't really make the commitment. It was a temporary fix that allows us to continue to have these specialized teachers, art, music, PE, and others that the school systems were telling us that they would have to eliminate because of this artificial class size limit that we placed last year. But the problem is, without a commitment to funding, when we know the dollars are there, but that commitment to funding just means we've kicked the can down the road. As I said last night during our debate on it, this is like Groundhog Day. We're going to be revisiting this next year, just like poor Bill Murray in the movie. And until we make that commitment of funding, we put it in the budget, or even just the simple language Senator Chaudhry and I proposed, which was just make the commitment, show our intent, we're going to be fighting the same issue again and again.
It's interesting. I'm struck by, especially Senator Barefoot, the rhetoric about sort of blaming school systems and not knowing how they spend the money. I think all the school districts returned a survey. The information is available on the DPI website, and yet we still hear from him that he doesn't know how the schools are spending the money.
You know, it's really not that hard. The information's there. DPI and our LEAs all use the same software, PowerSchool it's called. You can go in there and start pulling this data. I don't have that access at the DPI level, but I can go start putting those numbers together. It's just not that hard to figure this out. So to point the finger at the superintendents was just disingenuous.
Another trend that we're seeing, well, we saw it in the special session, we're seeing it this session, we're seeing it at a crossover deadline, are all these bills changing the ways our courts operate. They all seem to be relatively transparent, taking power away from Governor Cooper to make appointments. What do you make of this sort of rush to change our court system?
You know, it's interesting. The Republicans had the majority 6 years ago. They didn't try to take this power away from Governor McCrory. So it just seems that the only thing that changed was the results of the November 8th election with a Democratic governor. Our shrinking the Court of Appeals, for instance, from 15 to 12 judges. We could have done this at any time during the McCrory administration. They didn't want to do that. You know, electing judges now by party affiliation. They could have done that any time they wanted to. They've just waited until now to do this when there's a Democratic governor in place. They're changing the rules of the game. They're trying to change who the umpires are in the middle of the game.
This week, the House and Senate also overrode Governor Cooper's veto of the second incarnation of a bill that changes the way Ethics and Elections Board are constituted. Now it looks like that's going to go back to the courts. What do you make of this dispute?
Once again, changing the rules and trying to change who the umpires are. I mean, clearly, we went through a very contentious election season. Representing Durham County, I know what it was like. We were ground zero for a lot of the appeals and concerns about voting. And in the end, what we found was that Durham and many of these other places where there were challenges did everything exactly right. But it was the Republicans' majorities, it was the Republicans' umpires who called the balls and strikes in this game. But nothing was wrong. Everything was fine. But now they say, you know what, let's change this. We've got to change the rules of the game here because we can't win when we play by the regular rules. They don't get the outcome that they want.
Representative Jones has a bill that would change the order on the ballot. It used to be in the general election, it's the party of the governor. He wants to make it alphabetical, obviously, because the governor is a Democrat now. All this stuff is so important, but it also seems arcane in the grand scheme of things to people who don't follow the process? How do you get the message out that, they're sort of tinkering with these big institutions?
We have got to redouble our efforts to go back into the local communities and explain what's happening. The Senate Elections Committee last night passed out Senator Brock's bill that's going to not extend voting hours when there's a problem at a polling place. Again, an issue we had in Durham. What's going to happen, though, when that issue pops up in a conservative county, a red county, a Surrey, or a Randolph county? You know, the attempts to disenfranchise voters that traditionally vote Democratic is going to swing back one day into counties that traditionally vote Republican as well. And maybe that's what it's going to take, is when these, as you say, arcane rules that are going to disenfranchise people are going to have to come home to roost in their counties.
Despite the flurry about crossover, the big issue of this legislature, like everyone, is the budget. There's talk that Senate budget is coming out in a week or two. The Senate's already passed $850 million tax cut. Where do you think we are in terms of the budget, and what would you like to see in that plan when it rolls out?
Well, what I would like to see in the budget is going to be very different than what I suspect we see in a few weeks. You've already alluded to what I think the biggest issue is going to be in the budget, is that this, you know, nearly billion-dollar hole that the Senate has dug for us in our revenue. And again, that'll be negotiated out, because the House's figure, I think, is going to be considerably below that. But you just can't take $500, $600, $700, $800 million away from state revenue and then maintain that you're still investing in the things that are critical for North Carolina's growth and improvement. What I would like to see is continued funding for education. We still aren't there on teacher salary, in spite of what the Republican majorities tell us. Improving principal pay. It's embarrassing to me that we're 50th in the nation in principal pay. I'm going to go in a couple weeks and be principal for a day at North Elementary School in Person County. So I'll get a real flavor for the hard work and the critical role our principals play in our schools. Educational instructional materials are still lacking in our schools. So those are the kind of investments I'd like to see. In healthcare, we still have a lot of issues in healthcare, particularly in rural healthcare, and we've got to continue our investment there, not disinvestment. And in infrastructure, not just roads, but in our water systems, in parks and open spaces, we've got a lot of work that we can need to continue to do there. The Clean Water Management Trust Fund, I mean, we've almost zeroed that thing out over the years. We've built it back a little bit at the time. It's time to make significant investments there, because we're seeing all around the country and even in some of our communities, when we don't have access to clean water, what it does for health, and that it's stifling our economic development.
It's interesting, we're talking about the tax cut. The Fiscal Research Division that works for the General Assembly put out a memo recently that said if the Senate tax cut were enacted, we'd have a budget shortfall in a couple of years, and the Senate leaders seem to discount even their own staff.
You know, it's just amazing that they'll look at these things. And again, they just want to keep changing the rules. They don't want to listen to the folks who are giving them the good, unbiased opinions on this. You know, they cite it as alternative facts. And in fact, it's true. I mean, we've seen that, you know, near billion-dollar hole they've put in is going to cause problems. I don't know where they're getting their facts and their data from, but it's not from good, credible sources.
One thing we haven't asked, maybe people won't ask you, what difference does it make having Governor Cooper in the mansion these days instead of Governor McCrory in terms of fighting these battles?
Oh, it made a huge difference. It means that we have a solid messenger, and I really applaud Governor Cooper's efforts. He's going out, he's taking the words of communities. I mean, almost every day we see that he's visiting another part of North Carolina. He's not sitting in the mansion or in the Capitol building every day, but he's out in the community taking the message of what North Carolina has been historically and needs to be in the future, not where we are today. And so having him as that advocate is incredible. He has put around him an incredible team, one of the most diverse cabinets. I think it is the most diverse cabinet of governors ever appointed. Half of his cabinet choices are African-American, half are women. It's more reflective of North Carolina. They're a quality group of people with incredible credentials, and they're already in a number of significant areas showing great leadership. So that's very important as well. So Governor Cooper and his team are just providing solid leadership right now. A first-rate budget. I mean, I thought the governor's budget was just outstanding. I'd vote for that tomorrow, but I know not being the majority, we won't get to see that. But it was a very thoughtful budget. It returned the kind of investments that we need. So it's a world of difference. It's 180 degrees more than what we saw in the last administration. But the other piece, too, is Governor Cooper is one of the most experienced leaders in Raleigh. He's been here for 30 years, 16 years as attorney general, 14 in the legislature. He knows how the place works. That was something we didn't see in the previous administration either. And Governor Cooper has, I would say, a unique ability to work across party, the party divide, and to work on different issues. It's amazing to me how he can fight hard on an issue like HB2 and turn around almost in the next hour and partner very closely with the Republican leadership on economic development issues or transportation issues and things like that. He has a great skill that way.
Finally, before I let you go, I was somewhere last night and somebody asked me about redistricting reform. It looks like the crossover deadline is going to pass without action in the House or the Senate on bills that have been filed to change the way we do the districts. How important is that?
Well, as the sponsor of Senate Bill 209, which would put in a redistricting commission and get us on a great path to that outcome, I'm very disappointed that we're going to pass another session without redistricting reform. It is critical to North Carolina's future for us to have a fair, unbiased system of redistricting. You know, the old saying that voters should pick their representatives instead of representatives picking their voters. And so it looks like we're going to yet go through another round of special redistricting in probably 2018 without a commission in place. And it looks like we're probably heading into the 2020 census, 2021 redistricting without a fair, equitable system in here. It's extremely disappointing, but you know, those of us who are committed to that are going to continue that fight.
Well, thanks for all you're doing and all you're committed to. We really appreciate you being with us. Thanks, Senator.
Thank you. It's great being here.
Up next, an evaluation of President Trump's first 100 days. Stay with us.